let us now discuss a very important topic, that is labor laws applicable to hospitals. Let's come to part one of this. So some hospital related labor laws are, first is the Industrial Employment Act, also known as Standing Orders Act of 1946. You have the Shop and Establishment Act of 1954, Employees State Insurance for all the employees who are working in a hospital, 1948, Employees Provident Fund, 1952, Payment Gratuity Act, 1972, Maternity Benefit Act, 1961. Then yes, Minimum Wages Act, 1948, Payment of Wages Act, 1936, Payment of Bonus Act, 1965, Factories Act, 1948, Workers' Compensation Act, 1923, The Trade Union Act 1946 and the Industrial Dispute Acts of 1947. Let's discuss each one of them in details. Industrial Employment, also known as the Standing Orders Act of 1946. Why was this act passed? For basically for achieving industrial harmony and peace. It is beneficial to define with sufficient precision the conditions of employment, you know. So whenever a person is being employed, what are the conditions of employment of workmen employed under them, and to make known to such workmen that every person who is employed, he should know what is expected of him, the duties, his roles and responsibilities. This act is applied to every establishment wherein 100 or more workmen are employed on any day of the preceding 12 months. So 100 or more people work in a particular organization, then the Industrial Employment Act is applicable. So once the Industrial Employment Act is made applicable to a particular establishment, and then suppose if the number of employees are less, so initially say in the first preceding year there were 120 employees, but in the next year there are 80, so that subsequent reduction will not make that act inapplicable. So there is nothing in the act providing for cessation or discontinuation of application of the act. Standing orders framed in an industrial establishment do not cease to be operative on purchase of the undertaking by another employer. So even if there is another employer coming in, still the act will be applicable. The schedule to the act referred to the enumerated matters to be provided in the standing orders, model standing orders and amendments. The said matters relate to service conditions. So you know in what are the service conditions of a particular organization, and include among others classification of workers. So workers, the employees are typically classified into permanent or temporary, shifting workers, attendance, late coming, closing and reopening of sections and of entire establishment, and temporary stoppages thereof, and the rights and liabilities of the employers and the workmen. Disciplinary proceedings, retirement and superannuation. Within a period of 6 months from the date of which the model standing orders apply and to any industrial establishment under the Act, the employer or any workman employed therein may submit to the certifying officer 5 copies of the draft amendments for adoption in the establishment. So all these procedures need to be followed. On receipt of the draft under section 3, the certifying officer shall forward a copy of this to the trade union, if any, or the workmen together with a form of notice requiring objections, and which should be submitted in 15 days. After giving the employer and the representatives of the workmen opportunity to heard, the certifying officer shall decide whether or not any modification is necessary and shall make an order in writing. The certifier official should thereupon, after making modification within 7 days, send the copy to both the parties. So any party, that is workman or employer, aggrieved by the order shall within 30 days of the dispatch of this copies file an appeal to the appellate authority, whose decision would be the final and binding decision. So if any party, it can either be the person who's working or the employer, is not satisfied with the order which has been given, then within 30 days of the dispatch, they shall file an appeal to the appellate authority, and the decision of this authority will be binding and final. The standing authority shall come into operation on the expiry of 30 days from the dispatch of the authentic copies, and where an appeal is preferred within 7 days of which the copies are sent. The copy of all standing orders are final, as finally satisfied under the Act, shall be filed by the certifying officer in a register, and a copy of the standing order shall be made available after the payment of the prescribed fee. The certified standing order shall be pasted by the employer on the notice board, preferably at the entrance of the establishment. So whatever order has been passed, it has to be pasted on the notice board. The duration of the standing order is 1 year generally. under Section 10A, where a workman is suspended by the employer pending inquiry into the charges of the misconduct, the employer shall pay subsistence allowance at the rate of 50% of the wages for the first 90 days. So, in case even if the employee has been suspended, but the standing order has been given and inquiry is being held into this, so the employer is supposed to pay 50% of the wages for the first 90 days and 75% for the remaining period. Any dispute pertaining to the payment of subsistence allowance can be raised before the labor court. Schedule 1. These standing orders apply to all the workmen employed in the establishment, and either if they are doing manual work or technical work, they are all it is applicable to all of them. And these workmen are either classified as they are either permanent workers or temporary workers or probationers, badlis, substitutes. Every probationer who has completed the period of 3 months of uninterrupted service in the post in which he is provisionally shall be made permanent in the post by order in writing within 7 days from the date of completion of service. So even probationers are applicable for this. Wherever badli system is prevalent, the manager shall maintain a register of the badli shift wise with the following particulars: the name and address, the nature of the work and the nature of their occupation in which they are. The name of the badlis who are found to be irregular in attendance or inefficient in work may be removed from such register after giving them sufficient opportunity to improve. So, in case if the badli is not working in a proper way, it is always necessary for the manager to give sufficient notice, time to improve. In case still if it is not happening, then yes, they have the chance to remove them. All temporary work vacancies of permanent workmen shall be filled upon appointing their badlis whose names are entered in the register maintained. After filing up of any of the permanent vacancies, in case the badlis who have worked in that class of occupation shall be given preference where they were employed. All badlis who have put in 190 days of uninterrupted service in a seasonal establishment and the services of whom have been terminated on account of completion of the work, whether the vacancies are to be filled in, the names of the persons on the waiting list are to be considered. No person whose name is not in the waiting list shall be given preference until and unless his name is entered in the waiting list. Every class of workman shall be given his ticket number and the name of the department and his name. Notices displaying the periods and the hours of work and shift shall be displayed on the notice boards of the different departments, and notices specifying the weekly off, weekly holidays. So all these things have to be put up on the notice boards, and the period and the hours of and the work shifts have to be displayed. If there are more than one shift working in the department, then the services are liable to be shifted from one shift to the another. When there is any alteration or discontinuation of any shift, then the notice of 7 days is to be given. This is again very important. When there is discontinuation of any shift, then 1 month's notice has to be given to the permanent employees. So if a particular shift is getting discontinued, then 1 month's notice is to be given to the permanent employees. On the restart of any shift, the employer has to give a notice in the newspaper having a large circulation. A department may be closed down after giving 1 month's notice to the workmen. The grant of leave is the sole discretion of the employer, taking into consideration the exigencies of the work in the establishment. A workman desirous of proceeding on leave shall make an application to the employer in writing, and he has to obtain all the necessary permissions for that leave. An employee remaining absent for a period more than that of his leave, then there is a possibility of his losing his appointment unless he returns within a period of 8 days. So whatever permission has been given to him or whatever his official leaves, if he is remaining absent more than that, then there is a possibility that he can lose his appointment, he can lose his job unless he returns back within a period of 8 days. Every employee is entitled to casual leave. However, this leave shall be limited to 3 days at a time. So CLs, as we typically call it as casual leaves, are there, but they are limited to 3 days at a time. A female worker may be detained by the gateman appointed by the employer in case of suspect of some wrongful possession of the property and may be searched by a female searcher. So in case if the watchman feels that the female worker is taking along something, in that case she may be subjected to inspection, but that has to be done by a female searcher only. But the search shall be done in the presence of two witnesses and not in the presence of a male person except with her consent. So ideally there should be two witnesses during this search, and preferably no male during at that time, and if a male is present, then it has to be done with her consent. In case of stoppage of work, the employee shall be intimated immediately about the same. In case of a strike affecting the whole or a part of the establishment or the department, the establishment, the employer may choose either to close down the whole or a part of the department, or the said closure may be intimated by the employer in writing or displayed on the department's notice board. Under section 23 of the standing orders, the permanent employees may be terminated by giving them 14 days notice or by giving them 13 days wages, including all admissible allowances in lieu of the notice. Further, if the permanent employee desirous of leaving service, may give 14 days notice to the employer. So it's a standard practice to give a 2 weeks notice, you know, but if the employer wants to discontinue the employee immediately, the same can be done under section 23 of the standing orders. 14 days notice is necessary, and here the employee is to be paid all admissible allowances in view of that notice. If the permanent workman leaves the service without giving notice, no deduction on that account shall be made from his wages. So even if the worker does not give a notice, no deduction can be made. All the other employees other than the permanent employee shall be terminated on the basis of their leave without 1 month's notice. So in case the employee is not a permanent employee, then he can be removed without even giving a 1 month's notice. An order of termination of services shall be made in writing and shall be signed by the manager concerned, and the copy of the same should be supplied to the workman concerned. So it always this such notices are to be given in writing with the signature of the manager. The following acts and commission on part of the workman shall amount to misconduct: willful insubordination or disobedience, going on illegal strike or abetting, inciting, instigating or acting in furtherance thereof, willfully slowing down in performance of work or abetment, theft, fraud, dishonesty in connection with the employer's business or property, talking or giving bribes or illegal gratification, habitual absence without leave of absence for the period of more than 10 days or overstaying the sanctioned leave without the permission of the employer. So in all such acts, the workman, it basically means misconduct, you know. So the work, it shall amount to misconduct. Also, late attendance of not less than on 4 occasions within a month. If the employee is late for more than 4 occasions, then it amounts to misconduct. Habitual breach of any of the standing order or any law applicable made to the establishment or the rules made thereunder, engaging in trade within the premises of the establishment. So if the employee is doing that, even that amounts to misconduct. Collection without the permission of the manager any money within the premises of the establishment except as sanction of any law in force. So the employee is reporting to work in a drunken state under the influence of alcohol, disorderly, indecent behavior, it also amounts to misconduct. Habitual neglecting work is also misconduct. Habitual breach of any rules of instruction for the maintenance of running or any department or the maintenance of cleanliness also amounts to misconduct. Habitual commission of any act or omission for which a fine can be also imposed on the employee. Canvassing for union membership or a membership or the collection of union dues within the premises of the establishment except in accordance with any law or the permission of the manager, even that is not permitted until and unless you have the permission of the manager. Willful damage to work in process or to any property of the establishment amounts to misconduct. Holding meeting inside the premises of the establishment without the previous permission of the manager. So, you know, if you are having union meetings of the employees without the permission of the manager, that amounts to misconduct, or except in accordance with the provision of, or any law for the time being in force. Disclosing to any unauthorized person any information in regard to the process of the establishment which may come into the possession of the workman in the course of his work amounts to misconduct. Gambling is strictly not allowed. Smoking or spitting on the premises of the establishment where it is prohibited, you know, special zones are now made before employees where, you know, okay, if they have to during the break hours or something, if they want to smoke, but otherwise in the premises where work is done, it is strictly prohibited. Failure to observe safety instructions notified by the employer or interference with the safety service of the equipment installed in the establishment amounts to misconduct. Distributing or exhibiting within the premises of the establishment handbill, pamphlets, posters or other things caused to be displayed or means of signs or writing with visible representation or any matter without previous sanction is not allowed. Refusal to accept a charge sheet order or any communication served in accordance with the standing orders. Unauthorized possession of any lethal weapon is strictly prohibited. No act which is committed on less than three occasions within a space of 1 year shall be treated as habitual. So what's a habitual act? If it is committed on less than three occasions within the space of 1 year, is treated as habitual. Understanding order number 25, workmen guilty of misconduct may be warned of a censured or a fine subject to, in accordance with the provisions of the Payment of Wages Act 1936, suspended by an order in writing, signed by the manager, for a period not exceeding 4 days, dismissed without notice. So in such cases, yes, the employee can be dismissed. No order of dismissal shall be passed unless an inquiry has been held into charges levied against the workman. So typically, if there is repeated mistakes that is happening on the part of the employee, the manager has to inform, notice has to be served, and an inquiry is to be held in that case. A workman against whom the inquiry is proposed to be held shall be given a charge sheet very clearly setting the circumstances appearing against him, and you have to ask for an explanation as to why these things are being done. He shall be permitted to appear in person or through a workman working in the same department or through an office bearer of the trade union of which he is a member. So he can come in along with him, the workman who is in the same department or the trade union of which he is a member. Except for the reasons recorded in writing, the workman shall produce writings in his defense and cross-examine any witness on whose evidence the charge sheet rests. A concise summary of the evidence led on either side and the workman plea shall be recorded. All proceedings of the inquiry are generally done in English, Hindi or Marathi according to the choice of the workman, and the inquiry is completed should be completed within a period of 3 months, and for reasons recorded in writing may be extended to such further period if it is required and if it is deemed necessary by the inquiry officer. So in such, usually it has to be completed within a period of 3 months, but if it is extending further, if the inquiry officer says so, then yes, it can be done. The workman against whom the action or the inquiry is being conducted may be suspended pending inquiry. During this pending inquiry, the workman who is suspended shall be paid subsequent allowances at the following rate. So even if the workman is suspended during the inquiry, he is paid, but at the following rate. For the first 90 days, for the period of suspension, it is 50% of his total wages, that is half of what he draws per month. Basic wages plus DNS allowance plus other compensatory allowance. If the inquiry gets prolonged, say if it is more than what is required, and he continues to be under suspension of period exceeding 90 days, if it is more than 90 days, then he will be paid 75% of the total wages. Further, if the inquiry exceeds beyond a period of 180 days, then the suspended employee gets his full salary, that is 100% of the wages. So if it is more than 6 months, 100% of the wages are being paid to the employee. However, if the findings of the inquiry officer show that the workman has been directly liable for the delay, then the subsequent allowance may be reduced to one half of the rate. So if the inquiry officer feels that the inquiry is getting delayed because of the employee, then the subsequent allowance may be reduced to one half of the rate. The payment of subsequent allowance shall be subject to the workman taking up the employment during the period of suspension. The punishment shall be awarded taking into account the gravity of the misconduct and the previous record. In case the employee refuses to take the charge sheet, the same may be served upon the employee as per the charge sheet in the presence of two witnesses, and if the employee further remains absent in inquiry, then the inquiry may proceed expertise. So if the employee refuses to take the charge sheet, it is again served as per the charge sheet in the presence of two witnesses, and if the employee further remains absent in the inquiry, then it may proceed as per the expertise. A workman may be warned, censured or fined for any of the following acts or omission. First, absence without leave without sufficient cause. If the employee is absent without giving notice, without informing and without any cause, then yes, he may be warned. Negligence in performing duties, if he is not performing his duties properly, coming late to work, neglecting work, absence without leave or without sufficient cause from the appointed place of work, entering or leaving or attending to leave the premises of the establishment except by the gate or entrance appointed. So, you know, there is a particular entry exit point for employees. You have to follow all those rules. Committing nuisance on the premises of the establishment, breach of any of the rule of the instruction for maintenance or running of any department. So, in all such cases, the workman can be warned. The normal age for retirement shall be 60 years unless it has been expressly agreed upon by the parties by a settlement or an agreement that the age of retirement shall be different. See, generally for all employees the age of retirement is 60 years, but now we are seeing in certain cases, you know, 65 years. Unless it is agreed mutually between the two parties, the thumb rule is 60 years. Every employee who leaves service, retires or is dismissed, discharged shall without avoidable delay be given a service certificate if he is asking for one. So if an employee is leaving service, he has a right to ask for his leaves service certificate, which is basically, you know, a kind of requirement. Whenever you are joining a new organization, they would always ask for your performance certificate. So it is very important for the employee to work properly or it will reflect bad on his certificate. Domestic inquiry. No employer can punish his employee without holding an inquiry into the acts of misconduct committed by him. The principle involved is that nobody should be punished unheard. Domestic inquiry is the process of investigating facts and to establish whether an act of misconduct has really been committed or not. So this is very important, you know, without an inquiry, no employee can be just punished. An employer has to have a proper inquiry, know the causes, whether it was just a complaint because of some professional jealousy or whether actually the employee was found guilty, was found misbehaving or not following the rules and regulations. So domestic inquiry is the process of investigating the facts as to establish whether the misconduct has actually been there. So whatever we have discussed up till now, let us understand that in a nutshell, sequence and stage wise. Misconducted committed by an employee, complaint of report, preliminary inquiry. So once a misconduct has been committed, a complaint of report is given. Preliminary inquiry, if not necessary, it can be dropped also. Framing and issuing charge sheet, serving the charge sheet to the employee, considering workers' reply, accounting, appointing an inquiry officer, that is the notice of inquiry. Then comes the holding of actual inquiry, that is recording the employer's evidence, cross-examination by defense, recording evidence of defense and plea of delinquent, cross-examination by the management and report of the inquiry officer. The management must send his report and invite his reply and comments, and then finally the punishment is awarded. So principles of natural justice, at every stage the inquiry must conform to the principles of natural justice. Normally the inquiry must be held in the presence of the delinquent and should be allowed to be defended by his representative. So employee should be given a chance to defend himself by his representative. Let us now discuss the Shop and Establishment Act 1954. This is again a very important act. This act regulates the daily and the weekly hours of work, the rest intervals, opening and closing hours of establishments, the payment of wages, overtimes if any. So what is the employee to be paid during that overtime, holiday with pay, annual leave, employment of females, children and young persons, etc. This act applies in the first instance to shops, commercial establishments, restaurants, hotels, places of amusements in certain notified areas. The main provision of this act is, most important is regulation of working hours, payment of wages, leaves and holidays, terms of service and other conditions of work of person employed in shop, commercial establishments, establishment for public entertainment or amusement and other establishment. Employment of children and young person. So let us see what is the definition of an adult. It means a person who has completed his 18 years of age. Closed day, it means the day of week on which a shop or a commercial establishment shall remain closed. Generally we have seen it's a Sunday, in many cases Saturday, Sundays. Closing hour, it means the hour at which a shop or a commercial establishment closes. So every shop has an opening and a closing hours, generally say like 10 to 8, 10 to 9, something of that sort. Commercial establishment, it is any premise wherein any trade, business or profession or any work in connection with or incidental or ancillary thereto it is carried on. It includes basically a society registered under the Societies Registration Act of 1860 and charitable or other trust, journalistic and printing establishments, contractors and auditors establishments. Exclusion. So it does not include a shop or a factory registered under the Factories Act of 1948, so it's not applicable to factories, of theatres or cinemas, restaurant, eating houses, residential hotels, clubs or other places of public amusement or entertainment. Closed day. So every shop and commercial establishment must remain closed on a closed day. The chief commissioner has specified the following three to be national holidays. So there are these 3 days where it is compulsory. That is January 26th, that's the Republic Day. August 15th, that's our Independence Day. And October 2, that's Gandhi Jayanti. So let's understand what's a weekly holiday. Section 17. Every employee can take a weekly off. Generally, majority of the employees, for them it's a Sunday. But for those where, you know, shops are opened every day, in that case, employees have a choice. They can either take it on a working day also and work on Sundays, take a weekly off on, say, any of the working weekdays. So that depends on what they choose. Children are strictly prohibited from working. And this is a severe punishable offense. No child is allowed to work, whether as an employee or otherwise, in any establishment, notwithstanding that such child is a member of the family of the employer. So even if the child is a family member of the employer, he is not allowed to work. Wages for holiday, Section 18. No deduction shall be made for wages from of any employee on account of the closed day in Section 16 or a holiday granted under Section 17 of the Act. So even if it's a, say, public holiday, like say an Independence Day, there is no deduction of wages nor for a weekly holiday. If an employee is employed on a daily wage basis, he shall nonetheless be paid the daily wage for the holiday, and where an employee is paid on piece rates, he shall receive the average of the wages received during the week. Time and condition for payments of wages. No wage period so fixed shall exceed 1 month. So beyond 1 month, no wage period can exceed. The wage of every employee in any shop or establishment shall be paid on a working day before the expiry of the 7th day of the last day of the wage period in respect of which the wages are payable, and all wages shall be paid in cash. Where the employment of any person is terminated by or on behalf of the employer, the wages earned by him shall be paid before the expiry of the 2nd working day after the day on which his employment is terminated. Now, what are the deductions that can be made from wages? As per Section 20, the wages of an employed person shall be paid to him without any deduction of any kind except those specified in subsection 2. Deduction from the wages of employee shall be from one or more of the following kinds, namely, first, if there is a fine, then yes, it can be deducted. Deductions for absence from duty, yes. Deductions for damage to or loss of goods or loss of money entrusted to the employed person, and this loss, if it is due to the neglect of that particular employee, then yes, it can be deducted from his wages. Deductions for house accommodations supplied by the employer, deductions for such amenities and services supplied by the employer, deductions for the recovery of advances, deductions of income tax, deductions required to be made in order by order of the court, deductions for provident fund and for insurance. Leave. So, typically, you have the privilege leave. Every employee is entitled to a privilege leave as per the provisions made in the Act. Leave can be accumulated up to 3 times of the leave and of the leave entitled after 12 months of employment. So, an employee can accumulate those leaves also and take it together. When a leave is either refused or the worker is discharged before he avails the leave at his credit, the employer shall pay full wage for the period of leave. Wages for the leave period shall be calculated on the basis of the average of the wages during the preceding 3 months, including the earner's allowance. Every employee shall apply in writing within 15 days in advance, and the employer shall pass orders thereon not later than 7 days from the receipt of the application. Now you have the sickness or the casual leave, CL. Every employee is entitled to sickness leave or casual leave for 12 days at the rate of 1 day every month. So besides his privilege leave, if he is falling sick, so 1 day every month, so in a year 12 days, it means from calendar year January to December. This leave can be granted on the grounds of sickness or for private affairs. Balance of the leave cannot be carried over the next year. So whatever leaves, you cannot carry it over to the next year. It has to be taken in that year itself. cleanliness, lighting, ventilation, drinking water, etc. As per section 25 lays down that the premises of every establishment have to be kept neat and clean. Section 26 says that the premises of every establishment should be kept sufficiently lighted and ventilated during all working hours. So this is basically to maintain a good environment for the employees to work in, so that they don't suffer any health hazard, and the environment should be conducive for working. Employer has to furnish a letter of appointment to the employee. Under section 34, the employer is required to furnish every employee with a letter of appointment. It shall contain the following and such other particulars as may be prescribed, namely, most importantly, the name of the employer, the name, if any, and the postal address of the establishment, the name and the father's name, and the age of the employee, hours of work. This is again very important. This has to be mentioned in the appointment letter. Date of appointment, again very, very important. Letter of appointment to employees. The letter of appointment to employees as required in the section 34 shall contain the following with further particulars. The rate of wages or salary. Every employee should ensure that whatever has been discussed with the employer and the appointment letter what he has with him should mention everything very, very clearly. Designation of the nature of work for which he is employed. Any other concessions or benefits, if any, that may be special to his appointment. Notice of dismissal. No employer shall dispense with the service of the employee who has been in continuous employment for not less than 3 months without giving such people or employee sufficient notice period, that is at least 1 month's notice in writing or wages in lieu of such notice. So, if the employee has served continuously for 3 months or more, then an employer just cannot remove an employee. He has to give sufficient notice. And suppose if he still both of them are agreeing that they want to discontinue the services, then he has to pay for that 1 month. In case he fails to give 1 month notice, he'll be released from his. In case if he fails to give 1 month notice, he'll be released from his employment on the payment of that amount equal to 1 month's pay, as we just said. So he has to pay that 1 month's amount, and if he wishes to discontinue immediately, even that can be done. The amount payable as compensation under this section shall be in addition to any other fine payable under section 40. No person who has been awarded compensation under this section shall be at liberty to bring a civil suit in respect of the same claim. So if this compensation is given, then there is no point of getting in a civil suit for this claim. Let's now discuss a very important topic, that's the Employee State Insurance Act of 1948. Basically, all the employees working in organizations, they need to have some kind of an insurance cover for themselves, either when they fall sick or they meet with an accident during the course of the work or for company's work. So this act, basically also known as ESI, is for organizations where there are 20 or more than 20 employees. Let us study this act in detail. The Employee State Insurance Act is a piece of social security legislation enacted in the year 1948. Its object was to introduce social insurance by providing certain benefits to employees. So as I said, in case they are sick or maternity or employment injury or for certain other matters in that same relation, the act shall apply to all factories. The act has been extended by many state governments, shops, hotels, restaurants, cinemas, including preview theaters, newspaper establishments, and road transport undertaking, etc., employing 20 or more than 20 people. So in all such organizations where there are more than 20 employees, this act is applicable. And this is basically a piece of social security legislation which provides the employee with all the benefits in case of their sickness, for work related accidents, and maternity benefits. What is contribution? It means that the sum of money which is payable to Employee State Insurance Corporation by the principal employer in respect of an employee, and it includes any amount payable by or on behalf of the employee in accordance with the provision of this act. So there is a certain deduction which is done from the salary and which is deposited in this account, and similarly the employer also has to pay some amount towards the insurance of the employee. So what is the contribution period? It means such period as may be specified in the regulation. It must not exceed 6 consecutive months. However, in the case of the first contribution period, a longer period may be specified or under the regulations.